Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. Welcome to the Farmer's Philosophy series, where we make time with farmers who are pushing the boundaries of regenerative agriculture. We sit down with them and explore the world of regeneration beyond soil health. We also film these episodes, so please have a look on our YouTube channel or the link below if you're interested. For now, make a cup of tea, find a comfortable place to listen, and enjoy. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below. Welcome to this series, which we call the Farmer Philosophy Series. And we're in a very, very special place. We're going to talk about where we are, obviously, in a second, with a very special person, Jeroen Klompe, which I've known for a number of years. And I couldn't imagine a better place and story and moment and person to start this journey with. This is an experiment. This might be the only one, hopefully not. This is the first time we ever do video on this podcast or on this conversation series. So we're capturing it. Maybe you're watching this on YouTube or Vimeo or wherever we put it. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're just listening to it, which is perfectly fine as well. We try to be as visual as possible, but do know there is a video version which you can look at. So join us in a journey where we're going to explore. We're going to dig a bit deeper. We're going to look where the story and the conversation takes us today. So welcome to this very special place. Welcome, Jeroen. Thank you so much for agreeing on another experiment, because mm-hmm. we've done quite a few together yet. And I mean, we already started on the philosophy part, but let's just very briefly, because you hear sometimes some sounds in the background, maybe some bubbling, because we are in a place with a lot of other beings that are definitely alive. So where are we and where do we find ourselves here? If you had to describe a bit the background, which you can, of course, in the visual side, if you look at the video, you can see it.
Yeah, where are we? We are in a storage facility located on our farm, which used to be a storage facility for potatoes and carrots and onions. But we have transformed it last year into a barrel house, a barrel storage.
And what's in these barrels? Because it's not potatoes, onions, or empty barrels. This is a very special place.
Yes, this is a place, and we call them the ladies. And the ladies are our wooden barrels. And in the barrels, soy sauce is fermenting for at least 2 years in the barrels.
Yeah, we've done. I will definitely link them below. We've done an interview with Bert on Tomasu and the soy sauce journey. There are many interesting stories online. You can find many videos, but it's a very fitting place because here the barrels rest but are at work at the same time. And I think time there is if you look at your soy sauce bottle, the first ingredient is time. And it's very fitting that we have the time now to talk about it. We're at the end of the season. There's never an end of the season, but we're in November 2022. Everything slowed down just a bit. Never slows down a lot, but we have a bit of time to sit down and go a bit deeper into different moments. So what has been the season like this year? We're in 2022. I think you're going to say challenging, but what is from looking at sort of at the end, looking back, what's the first word that comes to mind?
When you are in the barrels, it's like a zen space. So things are popping up immediately in your head. And the first thing which is popping up in my head is that I'm proud. Looking back at the year, it was a special year because of the different weather conditions. and I'm super proud of the regenerative system we've built, because the difference between the conventional part and the regenerative part were huge this year. So that's a rewardance for all the investment we have made in soil improvement, in the whole system we've built to build soil, to grow plants, and that people around us, but also the core team and everybody, they are see it's going to work. It's just, really working.
Just to give a bit of background, we're here on a 360 hectare farm just south of Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Very intensive in terms of potatoes, onions, carrots, and soy and grain, obviously, to make this. And many fields have been in transition for a long time. Some fields have been in transition for shorter. Some fields you're just renting or leasing for a year. Yeah. So you can see the differences. And if you had to describe to the audience, like, what was the biggest surprise in those differences between, like, let's say, a more conventional extractively farmed or conventional field that you've been farming for some of the owners, compared to like the fields that have been on that transition for much longer? What was the biggest surprise? And what made you proud?
Yeah, that the core is water holding capacity.
So nothing about this carbon stuff that we've been talking about.
The water holding capacity was enormous this year. At the beginning, when you want to plant your potatoes or sow your onion seeds, etc., we had a super crumble structure with the right amount of moist to sow, because the cover crops, they were mulched and they were fermented in a short period, and they were storing or keeping or holding the water enormously. So the start of the season was good, and it was becoming drier and drier and drier. And yeah, you could see the difference in the development of the plants, on the plant resilience, the healthy side of the plants. And yeah, during the season, you could see the difference in, hey, these plants are continuing with the production and these plants are a little bit hesitant because of worse root systems or because of a less amount of water, etc. And that has resulted in, let's say, to make it visual, the most conventional plots we have irrigated 5 or 6 times. And the regenerative plots we haven't irrigated, or 1 or 2 times.
Which is massive. I mean, the fact that we already talk about irrigation in the Netherlands is a thing. I mean, that means climate is changing, weather is changing. And the fact, those differences, what did this season taught you, or what is the biggest lesson you learned, if you look back now at this year, after many, many years, because you've done an incredible amount of experiments, you've been on this journey for a long time, but what is the biggest lesson from this year?
That,
apart from the fact it works, it whatever it
yeah needs, but that time and patience is your best friend,
looking at the barrels, yeah,
but also in soil. If you have the patience to build it, it's going to give it back to you. The plants, they thank you with a better crop, with a better skin structure, etc., because you have invested in that, in time, in the possibility to rebalance nature in your soils.
And when you say rebalance nature, what does it mean to you?
Meaning that the balance between the most essential parts, nutrients, organic matter, biology in and above the soil, biodiversity, frequency, energy, they are all working together in the system we have built, which is called regenerative farming at the moment.
And you see in the most advanced plots that dance or orchestra is starting to, sing together or
yes.
Tune together.
Yes.
And is that a...
It's like an orchestra.
Is that a linear thing? Like at some point, or is suddenly it starts and you're like, whoa, like that plot is start, like the balance is, or the orchestra starts to make proper music instead of just...
Looking back at all the years we are busy with it, the first years, you ask the questions to yourself. am I doing it right? Because you are investing in it, but you see nothing.
Or less, even. You see more chaos, more...
Yes, but what I'm doing. But during the season, of during the years, it is improving and you see a little bit more results. But it takes time. And then after 3 or 4 years, it's going to accelerate. And then year 6, 7, and 8, holy shit, the system is going to work for itself. And you only have to maintain the system. And then the happiness is there.
And do you, like, are you going now with those first plots into a space that is completely unknown to you as well? Like, how far can that go? Is that, or are you starting to go into, okay, we always thought 10 was the max, and now we're going to, actually we're at 15 and we have no idea where it ends? Or are you still like in the comfortable space, or are you going into directions you don't even know yet?
We are in the comfortable space that we see how nature and soils are working. We are in a discomfortable space that we are learning more every day, and that we go in depth, and that we are going to ask ourselves more questions. What is happening?
How much do you, let's say, how much do you think you know now? A rough estimate.
I think
are we at 2%, 5%, 1%?
I think we are
10%.
No, I think we know
50.
I think what's happening, I think we know 20%.
Okay. And like, if I asked this question 7 years ago?
We knew the wrong things.
You thought you knew more, but you didn't.
Yeah, so maybe it's a negative. So minus...
So you have a big jump from minus 20 to 20. And
because we were learned and educated in the wrong things.
And what's the, when you say wrong things?
In the things we...
What is wrong? Yeah, what was...
It was not wrong. It was modified in those years because we were busy building that system and everybody was convinced about that system. And that's the system of modern farming, cost-price driven farming, large-scale farming, industrialized food systems, etc. But that system has an end.
And you saw that coming. I mean, I remember the first time we met, and I think we said it in the interview we did as well, like you at some point saw those lines, like the yield was plateauing and the costs were going up, and that's very dangerous as a company. And do you remember, because that's one thing, is okay, how are we gonna increase yields and or decrease costs, because otherwise this is not gonna end well. But I think there's a much more philosophical layer underneath that, because you keep saying and keep repeating over the last years, you have to listen to nature. Nature knows what it wants or what she wants, and we have to listen and tune into that and follow that, and what does the soil want, etc. But that is a huge shift from we farm and nature has to follow me or us, and we just plant and the rest of it. Like, do you remember what triggered that? Like that realization that I'm not in full control, I will never be, and I'm part of nature instead of above nature. I feel like that's the fundamental shift many go through in this space. But I'm also very curious, because you started as a very conventional farmer on a very conventional farm. It's not that you came to this realization and then bought a farm. No, you were farming and shifted that. Do you remember what started triggering that, like, oh, there's much more, and against nature, we're probably going to lose it or the battle?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest mirrors to open my eyes were our travelings around the world together with my wife and family. For example, we thought that we had the best soils in the world. We were utopia in farming in the Netherlands. We had the best universities, we had the best machineries, we had the best soil. We were the best. That was the conviction we had. We were convinced about it. But then during our visits, we always have the goal to find local food growers, how they do it, how do they sell their products, etc., local food markets, etc. And then we saw, maybe we have some problems also in the Netherlands with large-scale farming. And I remember a farm stay in Nepal, where we were sleeping at a micro farm, which was growing all the crops, and they were exchanging it with their neighbors, etc. And we were having conversations at night during dinner, super healthy dinner with super tasteful products. And I showed them pictures of what we were doing. And they were
proud, obviously. Like, look at my big tractors and my big fields. And yeah.
And she was not so good in the English conversations, but she said one thing super clear to me. And she said, too much iron. When I showed the pictures of the machineries working on our land, too much iron.
And what was your response? Were you able at that point to...
No.
Or were you like, no. What do you mean? Of course we have a lot of iron.
Yeah, because...
Steel has to drive.
Yes, and we need to
feed the world.
To work with the lowest cost prices in the world, because we need to feed the people, blah, 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 blah. But then, it was also the moment that my wife integrated more in the whole farming.
Who's a biologist, which we also interviewed. I'll put all of that below. Yeah.
If you want to have good soils, you have to need to have air and water and carbon and biology, all the things in your soil. And if you are honest, we maybe have a problem with soil compaction. And soil compaction leads to a loss of carbon, leads to a loss of biodiversity, of biology, etc., etc. So soil compaction on the heavy clay soils was our problem because we had too much iron. So
yeah,
the lady in Nepal, with one sentence, without having visited us, or maybe she will never visit us, she was totally right. And now you can walk on our soils. And I ask many people, what are you feeling? And they say, it's like we're walking on a
trampoline.
Yeah, trampoline, or like a pillow, that it's soft, it's breathing.
So that was the first trigger. I mean, of course, it triggered other thoughts already, but that whole compaction piece was... Like, you could see that was dangerous,
and then
it started a whole journey on the machinery, on single-lane farming.
And another eye-opener was that I always wanted to have, let's say, a system like the wine estates in France, where they
have... We wait a few more years for climate change, we can actually start growing it here, but yeah.
But a... location where there is terroir, where soil is the basis of the grapes, where they process them.
And you always wanted that here, because
not here. I like the whole system that you are investing in your soils, that you are adding value to your products by processing it. That you have a connection to consumers, that you have a story around your product, that you have a USP with your products, and that you have a community around you, that people have, that they, when they are in France, they wanted to visit and do tastings, etc., on wine estates.
Let's say you're pretty far with the soy sauce.
Like, yes.
You're getting there, but just to... how much of a stretch that is if you look around here, where it's all very extractive potato, carrots. Like there's no story, there's no soil in many cases, and it's all commodity. Like that step to talking about terroir and added value, etc., is a massive, massive, massive leap. Very interesting and very needed to get out of the commodity system, but it's not a, like your neighbors must have looked and still look very different at you or at the family here. Is that changing this year? Like these, do you feel like there's the neighbor over the fence, I mean, there are no fences here, but the neighbor over the fence looking at your fields and seeing differences or seeing all these weird people that show up on the farm and the fact that you have soy sauce, etc. Do you feel like there's a different energy now on this island compared to a few years ago?
Yeah, I like to just...
We have time,
so go back to... The changing moments, yeah, time is our friend. If you look back on the moment you were going to follow your courses, your study, etc., and sometimes you are doing things, and if you're looking back, then everything fits to each other. And looking back from... I will be 50 next year, and I started when I was 20, for example. In those 30 years, a lot of things have happened, but they are all coming together. They have all had a reason. And sometimes you don't know when you're in the moment what is the purpose for the later years. But that is, in my journey, quite strong in the moment.
That moment fits in now.
Yes.
Or that.
Yes. And sometimes it looks a little bit like the river goes this way, but there is a red line in everything.
And so what's another moment, apart from too much steel or too much iron, that triggered something? Whatever bubbles up for you. And then we come back to the neighbors, so don't worry.
Oh yeah, the neighbors. Yeah, I definitely feel that there is another energy around us on the island, that people are getting a little bit more curious. What's happening? What are they doing, etc.? Because we live in a very conservative area. If you do things in another way, mostly they will cut off your head. And they see that there is an appetite to visit us in the circles a little bit more around the island. International parties, you can see also that the more established industries, etc., are asking questions at the moment. What are you doing? How are you doing it? And that's also a rebalancing act for us, that we can do farm tours almost 2 or 3 times a day. But yeah, is there a business model around all the things we have invested in time, in building a system, etc., which is working now, which has cost a lot of money? It's energy.
Yeah.
And we strongly feel that if you give good things will come to you.
But you can also spend all day, every day doing farm tours.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's...
not profitable.
No. It's a huge drain of time. And has that to do with... like this is a crazy year as well, politically, on the input sides, on prices, on inflation. Do you feel like we're in an inflection point in terms of, let's say, that very input heavy industries are suffering everywhere, including agriculture? Like if your input prices went 2 or 3x up and were already at the edge, and let's say supermarkets are not paying more 3 times, do you feel that there's an inflection point, or is it still, it's okay to continue the current path for many? Or are many in crisis and maybe looking at other ways, or maybe taking things seriously that they looked at a few years ago, like, oh, there's alternative inputs, or oh, this...
It's depending if this inflation, extremely rise of input costs, is continuing, things need to be changed, otherwise the system will end. If this is just a storm for 1.5 years, things will get back to normal as it was.
So what do you hope?
I hope that the whole system, like the big oil tanker, which is not steerable, is getting against the wall at high speed. The crisis needs to become much more bigger before things are going to change, because the system wants to stay in the system because it's a very profitable system.
For the system.
Yeah. For the system, yes. And not for the farmers and not for the consumers, because there are two victims of this system. That's the consumer and the farmer who are paying the bill. And that's why I don't give energy at this moment to the system. No, we are giving energy to our own system, our own concept of soil processing and marketing, that we can build a fully autonomous system based on soil.
So basically creating a less dependent on the outside, or yes, much more untouchable, as somebody in the podcast called it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then from a position of strength and alternatives, yeah, like, look,
yeah,
there are other ways.
Yeah.
Building that alternative engine or yeah, whatever system next to it.
Independence.
Power.
On the most extensive
freedom
way is the goal in communicating with soil, in the creativity around improvement of the system, about creativity of the products we are making based on fermentation, about everything.
Do you see, or do you feel that, I feel that most people don't talk about it enough or don't even think about it enough, that this is a power struggle as well. We've created a system that is completely dependent on outside forces,
yes,
that are not sharing our agenda. Let's put it politely.
Yes, yes.
And so this is a creating autonomy, creating independent, still connected systems, mm-hmm, but way less dependent on a single large input company that gets, yeah, its ingredients from wherever and ever. And this is a power struggle. This, yes, is an independency, freedom struggle that any sector probably needs to go through, but farming especially. Do you have any of those conversations with your neighbors?
No. No, that's. I have conversations with my most inner circle about this, because it's.
Are they farmers? What is your most inner circle?
My most inner circle is my wife, my children, and the core team, who are building this whole system. That's the core of the core, and we are fully focused on improving this system, that it will be perfect for us to be independent, to create full autonomy, starting with the soil, starting with the seeds, starting with the farming system, starting with the processing, and starting with the sales community. So it's from soil till bottle, from soil till end product, everything is in one hand.
And do you think that scalable is a bad word here, but like, how would a vision look like for the, like, does every farmer need to do that, or how would that work for on a larger scale, or how would that be repeated? Is that for, can we expect every farmer or every farm company to go through that journey, or is there going to be some kind of interdependence in terms of potentially processing and selling? Because otherwise you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to be good at everything from the seed all the way up to selling, which is rare and difficult.
It's, yeah, that's true. But the whole philosophy is there. I strongly believe in a regenerative family or a regenerative business or a regenerative business model or a regenerative product, meaning that you are always busy by improving and reinventing yourself. And then you become a better version of yourself and it can be your family, your farm, your soils, etc. And then you are creating a uniqueness. If you do that on the right way, that there is demand for that uniqueness, then everything is scalable.
So how do you scale uniqueness?
That's you have to find the formula for that. Mm-hmm. But if you are a super tomato grower, growing excellent tomatoes or nutrient dense tomatoes, it's about your focus point, and there is a market for it, you can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you have to think a little bit more in let's say units instead of big worldwide companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also scalability in 20
units.
20 units, which can be a big unit.
Which is how nature operates.
Yes. Like it's scalability in ecosystems.
And repeatability almost.
Yeah.
But that clashes with our current.
Meaning that the ketchup of you make from those tomatoes, is maybe of a different taste in Africa or in Southern Europe or in Canada.
From your experience, the consumer, because you go all the way down to the bottle, in this case, maybe even the bottle of ketchup, consumers is a bad word. Like, are we ready for that role to accept that this barrel tastes different than that barrel? Or this bottle of tomato sauce or tastes slightly different because it's a different year, etc., etc. Or your beans taste slightly different.
It's a mindset. It's a mindset.
Are we ready for that? I mean, you're proving it. For soy sauce, we absolutely are. For wine, we've accepted that. In a long time for coffee, we're there as well, chocolate, I mean, but also for potatoes, also for quote unquote more boring things. Do you think there's an inherent like longing for the terroir as a consumer, as a participant, somebody that ends up eating what you have produced?
Yeah, but maybe the whole mind shift is going very slowly, because also time is our friend, and that people get a little bit more awake about what they are eating. Because a lot of people don't know exactly what they are eating, with the result that we have created also a world, which is called the pharmacy at this moment, where we are earning a lot of money and spending a lot of money to medicines, etc., etc. So if you see the development of the insurance costs, health insurance costs, and if that's still a very steep line in the future, there is a economical way that people are going to get awake. Hey, are we good in what we are doing and that we are eating? And then maybe there is an eye-opener for the people that say, maybe we have to find ways where we can find healthier or more tasteful food. Because if it's healthier, most of the time it's more tasteful.
So have the hospitals and insurance companies, like health insurance companies, have they been on the farm?
Hospitals, they have been on the farm.
And what is their... Because now we're getting into the nutrient density part, soil health part. Like, how was that? Did you get like a bus of doctors, or what was the...
We get the staff.
Because we're back to the farm manage- tours that you have to turn into a business.
The management of a big hospital in the Netherlands, they were here to look at the beehives as an interesting part around biodiversity. And we did quite an open presentation, interaction about how I see what is the pharmacy of the future, which is soil. And it was a super interactive, interesting, in-depth discussion. It was a little bit like a U-turn discussion, where they came to the conclusion that the system we are building at the moment, which is called nature, we are not building it, we are
facilitating.
Yeah. Yes. And that they have lost it also. So economy has lost ecology, but the hospitals has also lost ecology, or the nature and the natural power to get more healthier. So I gave them some results of studies of researchers in relationship to the recovery after a long surgery, which are quite impressive figures. So I asked, as a conclusion, when can we start a collaboration between, hey, the farmer and the hospital? Can I bring?
How many potatoes do you need?
Yeah. Yes.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
And the conclusion was that they didn't have a kitchen anymore in the hospital.
Outsourced,
they only had a
everything.
Pharmacy. They had outsourced it in a 5-year tender. That, yeah, people need to have food, but yeah.
If it comes in a box, it's also fine, yeah.
We have to heat it up and that's it. But that's the system we have created where money was dominant, because everything is about cost price and earning money.
And so when will that moment, I mean, it's impossible to predict, but when those costs, it's the same cost curve that you've seen on the smaller scale on the farm, obviously, like inputs going up, yield is going plateauing or going down. The same we see with our health. Input costs the costs are going up and the outcome is getting worse, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the wall there? Like, how is that supertanker going to hit some resistance at some point? Or we're just going to add, I just got my new insurance bill for next year, and of course it augmented quite a bit. Like, when is somebody going to say, okay, this is just, or does this get way worse than spent 30, 40, 50% of our total budget on healthcare before we get awake? Or what do you see there? Because it seems like health is sort of water holding capacity is the most important thing, but health seems to be the entry point for the rest of society to get on board with this. But if the current system is insurance, 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 and hospital, 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 and we outsource our food production, what do you see there as a... Are we close to an inflection point there, or are we still quite far away? Because they are super enthusiastic, and then they say, yeah, but we outsourced our food for 5 years, so yeah. Come back in five.
Yeah, I think we are not there yet, reflecting to the enormous high energy prices at the moment, where people have to pay three times the same amount of money for the same amount of energy or gas. And there is not still strikes public disobedience, or what is it called?
Demonstrations again.
For those energy prices. Yeah, there is a little bit buzz in the media, but it's not there yet.
It's not bad enough yet.
Not bad enough yet.
You would expect three times. I've seen seven times as well in some places.
And we are still continuing. Yes. So,
so you just keep building on the alternative system, keep grinding away, not plowing, but keep building, yeah, but and building and building and building.
The conclusion is the pain is not painful enough yet.
So is that the mission we have now? To keep building until the pain gets enough in the different systems for a bigger shift, like a 10% shift or 15 or whatever, the tipping points. I mean, there's a lot of research into that. But is that what we can do, or can we, you know, we cannot increase the pain? That would be...
I think we have to have the faith and the trust that things are going to change. If that's in 2, 3, or 5 years, that's not, or maybe it takes a generation.
What gives you the trust?
There's trust in our system because we get the rewards that we are doing good things, that gives you trust, and that there are people who want to buy your stuff, which is paying the bills, that gives you trust also. So there is a growing appetite of people who are reaching out to us. Hey, we have heard about you. We have heard good things about you. We have heard that you are building soils, etc., etc. So, yeah, what gives us trust that the amount of people who are entering into our energy at this moment is growing. That gives us trust.
And hope.
It gives us trust that people who are that the people are leaving the farm or the brewery or whatever, that they are touched in their heart, that they get emotional, that they say, hey, stop, it's too much at the moment. This is really mind-blowing what you're doing. And it's starting small. It's like putting a stone in the water. It's like a metaphor, but it's how it works.
Are you hopeful?
Sorry?
Are you hopeful? It's a question I keep, the last few episodes, sometimes it comes up. Are you, from what you see outside, from what you emerge literally in nature, you say, you keep talking about trust, but are you also hopeful?
Yeah. Yeah. But not giving too much attention to the outside world at the moment, not giving too much attention to all the media at the moment. Focus on what we are doing, and we get more questions. How? Yeah, but we don't know how everything works, but that means us that we want to go more in depth also.
Does this journey make you humble as well? Like, there are so many questions on the fields, on everything.
Yeah, but if you're doing it together, then it's not so complicated, because you can...
Together meaning with your team, together with nature.
With the team, with nature also. But then there's always a priority in questions. And if you just prioritize them, you can say, oh, let's focus on that question. And if you go to your fields and you are in your fields, there's always one big thing popping up which is important at this moment. The plants and the soils are always telling you, this is the important thing.
So you walk in your fields, you try to get into your Zen space, and it tells you what needs to be done.
Yes.
So when you're overwhelmed, when you're completely, your phone is ringing nonstop, I don't know how many messages, etc., you go into your field, or one of the fields.
Yeah, but you have to
tune in. You cannot do this from the tractor, I'm imagining.
No, you have to tune in into your crop, into your barrels, into your... And when you tune in, there's always the most important thing to do at the moment.
And it's always correct, like what comes up at that point?
If you wake up in the morning, there's always, if you listen carefully, there's always one important thing which needs to be done today.
And what if you wake up and you're completely overwhelmed with to-do lists, emails, etc.? What do you do when... Do those days happen, or you're usually wake up relatively zen?
No, absolutely not. But that it's getting back to the essence after a very busy period. And if you listen carefully to your body is telling you, hey, you are totally disattracted from the core things because you are busy with your action lists, with deadlines, etc., etc., etc. All the things need to be done, blah, 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 blah. Get back to the silence first, and then all the beautiful things are popping up. Most of the time, Sunday mornings, I go walking in nature, etc. A lot of answers to questions are popping up.
Is that your meditation? Do you meditate?
Yes, we do.
How fundamental is that?
It's extremely fundamental, but when it's busy, you say, oh, not today. Oh, let's wake up a half hour earlier, because I need to do that and that. I need to be in Amsterdam at 9 o'clock. Oh, you forget it. So that's the thing.
Do you notice them if you don't do that for...
If you're honest to yourself, you notice it.
Yeah. If you don't, you get hit at some point. And has that ability to sense or listen or even understand the language of a field changed over the last years? Like, do you get better, is not the right word. Do you get more in tune, more able to listen, more able to translate what it's saying? And what is it, I mean, for somebody that doesn't walk fields very, I mean, I walk them, but not my fields every day, etc. What, how would you describe that feeling? Like, this field needs this, like how?
Yes.
I'm not saying how does it tell you, but how does it feel?
After this conversation, we are going out with a ecologist to our fields, and we are going to dig holes and to see what the roots of the cover crops are telling us. Not the above ground biomass, then what are the roots telling us?
And you see that by smelling, by seeing, by touching.
Seeing by structure, you're seeing by the depth of the roots, by the thickness of the roots, by the color of the roots, by the diversity of the roots, by everything.
And by now you have seen so many roots that you immediately see, okay, good, okay-ish, or...
Yes.
It needs X, Y, Z.
Can we see the big soil animals? We cannot see bacteria and fungi. We go in depth into bacteria and fungi this winter. But what is life telling you? Because people, they have an attitude, a non-verbal communication. Plants have also, soils have also.
And what are the big differences, like on a conventional plot, compared to the ones that have been on a journey for a long time? When you dig that hole and you see the cover crops, what's the story?
There is a simple comparison that if you have a let's say a conventional plot without a lot of soil health, a lot of biology, and you are working on that field, it's quiet.
Literally quiet.
Yes. And if you are going to work on a field where the biology is much, much better, when there's much more soil life, within 20 minutes, the birds are there, and you haven't called them, you haven't sent them a message to reward you that they have beautiful worms or something like that. That's how the system works. You're not sending a message, but they instinctively know, hey, this is good shit.
This is a good lunch, yeah.
And they are there, out of nothing.
Oh, they were following you, probably. They know, they get the message. And, I mean, some regenerative farmers or farmers that have been farming regeneratively would say it's a lot more fun as well, a lot more complex and complicated, and there are endless questions, etc. Would you describe this way of living and way of farming, but it comes from a way of living as well, as much more enjoyable and more fun?
Definitely, definitely. There's no doubt, but it's real fun. We are super grateful about what's happening. That we are proud. On the other hand, it's becoming more difficult, way more difficult, because you can destroy the things you've built so quickly, because it's such a vulnerable, fragile system that you can destroy it with entering it on wet conditions or wrong conditions, or with wrong air pressure in your tires, etc., etc. So you have to be super careful of what you're doing, and ask, and I'm asking the team it every day, what we are going to do now, is that improving soil or helping the plants? Yes or no?
Does it make it more scary as well?
It's not scary. It's being in the moment of what you're doing. And sometimes you have to make an intervention which is not super good for the soil, because the weather forecast is not so good and we want to harvest, yes, but then it's a total clear decision that we are going to enter this field now and that we accept that the soil quality is going to be down a little bit. But what's the next step to improve it again? So yes, it's more enjoyable. Yes, it's becoming from the amateur league to the Champions League in farming.
Do you really see that? Like, yeah. This is the absolute cutting edge of farming is this space. And there are not so many globally.
Not yet.
That you can compare notes with, or at least share notes.
But the beautiful thing is that the whole community of regen egg farmers is extremely open towards each other. Extremely.
Much more than conventional farmers.
Yeah, that they find them in that they find each other in a very natural way. There was a guy on the farm working for a big consultancy company. I
know who you mean.
I told him that I was planning a vacation in South Africa. And
that's the right person to talk to. Yeah.
Immediately, four emails popped up on a Sunday morning with introductions to regenerative farmers in South Africa. I wrote them an email back, and Bob, yes, you're welcome. Let's have a good conversation about Regen Egg. I will show you everything, etc. Totally open.
That's amazing.
It's. Yeah, and this one guy was making vinegar, and that guy was managing 500 cows on a very regenerative way. But it's all about the system and getting the business model fit around Regen Egg. That's the game.
Staying in business and staying alive while the big system starts to slowly shift.
Yeah.
Staying in the game, basically. Yeah.
Staying the game by having connection to an end consumer.
And because you've tried it many times also in this whole short value chains and etc. And
but the moment was not there.
It wasn't so successful.
No, it was not successful. It was not there. But looking back, that it was an enormous hard learning curve.
Because at this scale, it's not that you can go to a farmer's market.
You need
a lot of bags of beans, potatoes,
yes,
etc.
But it was a real hard learning curve, and if you look back,
are you happy you did it at that point? Because you invested in companies as well. You have set up a number of ones here in Rotterdam, and in
looking back, it was all worth it. But it has forced us to come to the real essence of farming, making products, and connecting to the consumer. And my wife is always telling it, if you hit the bottom of the swimming pool, you can jump enormously fast, of high or powerful.
Which is a funny metaphor. We use it in impact investing and Tonic as well. But then on another side, like the swimming pool where you're in the deeper end of the pool where you don't feel the bottom, because that's the scary bit. But that's also the interesting piece, because if you can feel the bottom, of course you can jump. But you still are in the safe space, and it feels like here, and many other farmers are exploring pieces and ways of creating life, literally, and trying to create a system which improves over time and harvest enough to keep the system, pay for the system. It's a task which is an enormous task, enormous balancing act between entering that field because you have to harvest and you know you're going to push back soil health a bit, and like taking that decision day in, day out is something I don't think most people understand.
What we're always saying is that we're not going to claim things. We always say a chance for everybody is not a chance. So you have to reinvent yourself. And then there are, let's say, examples how could be done.
So it's much more of a personal
if you want
journey.
To, yes.
for a farmer, for a land.
If you want to be very successful in regenerative farming, you have to change your mindset first.
And I would argue in any sector. Because what you're learning here, it's part of the series as well, is applicable to health, probably living, education, mobility, whatever other sector we can...
Education, very interesting case.
But how many other hours do we have? Yeah,
yeah, but...
Time is our friend.
Yeah, but
very interesting case. What
education
makes you say that?
Education is a big thing in RegenEgg at this moment. And we have experienced quite an an intensive example with our son. He was in, let's say, old school education farming, but growing up on a regenerative farm, and yeah,
boom.
Yeah, that was clashing. It was like, yeah, there was one institute pulling on one leg. Yeah, you have to learn and to do what was old school, and you have to give those answers in your exams. And there was the situation at home, who was pulling on the other leg. Let's say, yeah, we do it on a different way. So he was always discussing it with his professors, with his teachers.
Should I answer this question the way you want me to answer, or the way I know it should
be?
Yes. Yeah.
Which has resulted that he was totally not happy anymore with the existing school system, and that he quit school. But now we are in the situation that he's learning it on a total different way. He's going to do internships, etc., etc. He's going to do some courses. I take him with him to colleagues, which are farming regenerative. We go on.
So you have to basically build the school yourself.
So education
on top of all the other things.
Yes, it's and the regenerative school is not there yet. But that has a result that he doesn't have the right diplomas at this moment in the existing system, which is a very strange situation, because I'm 100% convinced that he will be super successful in the things he likes to do.
But you need the... Which I think many parents recognize from struggles with the traditional school system in general and alternative schools, etc., that you still at the end need some kind of paper while you are prepared for life way better than many other school systems do. And in ag, it's exactly the same. Like, the reality of a place where we're now is way ahead of any farming school or any farming university or any applied university you can get. So what do you do? Yeah. Do you go there and struggle for 4 years and fill out the answers they want to hear while you know that the rest of the world has moved on, or not? But then you don't have the paper. So now he's not going to have the paper. Is that an issue? Because I know, like, in France, you need to be an official farmer and went to farming school before you can actually are allowed to farm.
It's not an issue, but the system has made it an issue.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to start an official regen farming school?
Yeah, no.
No,
we're focusing on those things, and yes, we invest in soil, in barrels, and knowledge. That are the three mantras we have. But the business model of knowledge is not there yet.
Maybe start with farm tours and then slowly build up. But it's a big one. And so, as we're slowly winding down this interview, I mean, time is our friend, but at some point it's done. As we're getting closer to the end of the year, the days are getting darker, or we're getting closer to the shortest day, it's also a time to think and reflect, as we've done to this year. But what are you excited about for the next years? Like, what's the most exciting piece now, if you can share, obviously, whatever is not top secret, because there are some pieces of this farm that are. On this journey, what excites you the most, if you had to pick one thing now, like, oh, the next, maybe not even next year, but like, I know it's coming, we're working on something, or we're going to work at some point on X, Y, Z, and it's just really, really exciting. What are you looking forward to the most?
I look forward the most thing to making the next step in perfectionism of the holistic regenerative farming system. Meaning there is space for improvement for the biofertilizers. There is space for improvement of our own seeds. There is space to improvement for the inoculants. There is space to improvement for the cover crop mixes. There is space to improvement for our soil biology development. There is space to improvement for the quantum farming part. So lots of possibilities.
Incremental.
Yes, but what I learned is that you not focusing on one thing, focus on the system. So that meaning that you have to improve all the parts of the system a little bit to get the whole system on a higher level.
So you're saying I'm not missing one piece. It would be amazing to have X, no. Y, Z, but I want to improve every single one piece, yes, by piece, because I know the system will start to keep coming back to the orchestra, yeah, metaphor, yes, singing, yes, better or yes, playing music better.
We started with an orchestra, and every single thing in the orchestra, every single instrument of the orchestra needs to be fine-tuned.
And because are you adding other pieces to the orchestra? Are there pieces you feel missing? Like, we're not working on this yet, but it would be really, if I had unlimited time and resources, I would also start working on this, because it feels like a missing instrument in the orchestra at the moment. Or are you saying, actually, we have quite a nice mix and we have to keep improving the quality of the and how they sing together?
I think the recipe for the mix of our regenerative system is ready, but there is a way to improve the ingredients of the recipe, and maybe we are going to change some cooking techniques to create the right 3 Michelin star dish in regenerative farming. Not talking about products, but talking about the growing system in the plants and soil.
And do you feel confident enough to, let's say the neighbor calls or whatever on this island and says, I have 100 hectares, please do quote unquote it. Like, start applying it here. Relatively similar soils, of course, relatively similar climate. I'm not saying somebody in the East that calls or someone in Germany, etc., which is very different. Do you feel confident enough, like, okay, we can start kickstarting the journey, maybe go faster than the 7 years? Or do you feel confident, or you say, let's first experiment a lot more on our...
We are fully confident about it. It can go faster than we've done it.
Of course.
Because we've paid the price for failures.
Are those questions coming?
Yes, they are.
Are people are knocking on the door and saying,
they are. They
help
are
us.
Help us. And yeah, the we are looking for the model. How are we going to do that? And how are we going to reward ourselves? And there is a business model in soil improvement. That's for sure. So can we be paid for the soil improvement service as it is, as the very simple thing?
And if you had to choose, what would you want to be your, I mean, very non-philosophical KPI? Like, what do you want to be paid for? Is it water holding capacity? If you had to pick one thing and said, okay, if we get it from this to that, you pay me. What would you naturally go to?
It's not one thing. That's the thing.
Like, how would you be paid then? Like, what are good indicators that you've done your job in case you?
It's the whole soil health indicator, yeah, which is divided into different KPIs. Let's say water holding capacity, biodiversity in and above the soil, the physical structure of the soil, the chemical structure, all those things are together compared in one figure, which is called the soil health index, which need to be improved. That's the parameter we're talking about. And then you are increasing the internal values of soils, which are an indicator for the external value of soil.
It should be,
yeah.
It's a whole different subject, yeah, on land ownership and connection of prices here. Do you see any changes before we open a complete rabbit hole again? Like, in the Netherlands or in Western Europe, we have often hear that prices are very high and not necessarily connected to, let's say, the underlying health indicators of the soil. Is there more discussion about that? Like, how to bring them back into balance also there? Like, prices land pieces are being sold for are not connected to what you see you can do on it.
It for me, it's a insurance in the biggest asset you have, soil capital. And when the market is going down fast, because we are not earning money anymore or because of our external circumstances, etc., I'm 100% convinced that the top soils will keep their values.
The best soils, yeah.
The best soils.
With the best top soils.
There's always demand for the best soils.
Mm-hmm. So even if you're very cynical on a lot of things, it's an insurance policy to have healthy soils and all the other benefits.
And you don't want destroyed anymore because your business models are based on your soil health. Mm-hmm. So the what if question is asked a lot of time. What if, yeah, but a farmer never wants to destroy his system where that's the basis of life of the whole income stream of him. He doesn't want to destroy that.
And yet,
why should you destroy your lifeline?
Mm-hmm. As we all created a system that rewarded that or only asked one yield question,
yeah,
that was it. I think it's a good place to end. And I want to thank you so much for, first of all, allowing us to film here, mm-hmm, taking the time and creating the space for this conversation and for the journey we've been on over the last years.
Yeah, and we will keep on with that journey. We're not ready yet.
Will you ever be ready? What is ready?
Ready is that we're sitting on a couch watching over regenerative fields.
Mm-hmm.
I will never retire, but I will hopefully there's more time in the month for doing other things than the things we're doing now. But that we are super proud of the whole system at scale we have built based on just soil improvement and integrating nature in the whole farming system.
I think even more than integrating nature, like really, I'd say dancing with or following or facilitating. But you started this whole conversation, it's a nice circle actually, that you are very, very proud of this year. So maybe you are, I mean, there's a bench downstairs, but there's a bench to sit on and look at on the fields, even in a November day where it's gray and it's, but still look proud of what has shifted or has.
15 years ago, everything was gray and brown and everything was plowed. Now we're sitting on that bench and there's life everywhere. There is, the whole farm is full with cover crops. The whole farm is full with life. In November, in December, in January, the birds are there, the flowers are still there.
So imagine in 15 years.
And we've planted trees and we are going to plant hedges now and all those things.
Yeah, I don't think it's the last time we...
No, because I was reading a study of a Japanese professor what the function is of birds early in the morning when they are whistling.
Mm-hmm.
It's to open a very biological term in the leaves that photosynthesis will start that day.
So the birds trigger with their tone the photosynthesis, so without the birds there's less or... But.
And if you want to have birds, you have to have trees and hedges, etc.
Because otherwise they don't come.
It's so super logical.
So simple.
It's really simple.
It's very complex, but it's very simple.
Yeah, but there is a famous football trainer who always says, if you can see it, then you understand it, or the other way around, doesn't matter.
I think with that quote, I think it's Cruyff, no?
Yeah.
Once you see it, you cannot unsee it. I think in Regenag, it's definitely the case. I think with that, we wrap up.
Yeah,
we can
cool.
talk another 4 hours, but time is our friend and ending this conversation now. So thank you so much.
Super.
For allowing us to take the time.
Thank you.
Cool.
Brilliant.
That's a wrap. Thank you so much for watching till the end, and I hope you enjoyed this first episode, first filmed episode of the conversation series of the podcast as well. And I really, really enjoyed it. Let us know in the comments below. Reach out through the website, through our social media, etc. What you think, what we can improve, who we should interview next. And I absolutely hope to see you, to hear you, obviously, at the next one, because this is something that I hope we'll be doing more often, to have the time to go deep with the absolute regenerative pioneers of the era we live in. So thank you so much for watching, listening, wherever you are. Get in touch if you have feedback, ideas, etc. And see you at the next one. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.